You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
2 years ago, a couple of pristine and healthy lakes in Newfoundland became toxic waste sites. This didn't happen by accident. It happened as a result of mining regulations. Both lakes contain brook trout and Atlantic and landlocked salmon. Canadians heard 2 weeks ago that 16 healthy lakes are similarly threatened with becoming tailing ponds for new mines. At the heart of this situation is a regulatory concept called Schedule 2. Schedule 2 of the Metal Mining Effluent Regulations creates an avenue for healthy lakes to be reclassified as tailing ponds, making them exempt from strict standards governing pollution from mining waste in water bodies. Catherine Cummins is Asia-Pacific Coordinator at Mining Watch Canada, and she joins me this morning from Ottawa. Hi, Catherine.
Hi there.
Can you describe Trout Pond on the Exploits River watershed in Newfoundland and what's happening to it and another lake nearby?
Yeah, so the first two lakes that were put on Schedule 2 in 2006 are in central Newfoundland. They're near a town called Buchans. And these two lakes, both of them, as you said, contained brook trout and Atlantic salmon. They were also home to otter and a number of other important species. They're in the center of something called the Exploits River system, which is a very important salmon fishery in Newfoundland, and there's been about $13 million of public money put into this river system to improve the salmon habitat. And now you've got, in the middle of this, these two lakes. They're called ponds in Newfoundland, but they're really lakes that are now at this very moment being destroyed by mine tailings, and they will be destroyed forever. They will never be healthy lakes again. In fact, they're quite toxic, and animals need to be kept away from them. And as I said, they're in the middle of the Exploits River system, so what they've had to do is dam them off on both sides so that the river gets diverted around them. And this is very problematic because these dams are going to have to be maintained in perpetuity, and the mine is only going to last 6 years.
Now, these were the first couple of lakes that were under Schedule 2. How many lakes are threatened? We heard 16, I think, in the story that CBC ran a couple of weeks ago. What does that look like?
Yep, there's 16 lakes that are on a list, which we've received. We received a list in August of 2007 from Environment Canada and DFO. This was after months of asking them to give us a list. And the list they've given us with the 16 lakes, we know that there's more. Informally, they're telling us that there's more companies lining up behind these 16, but these 16 are supposed to be near term. And in fact, of the 16, there's two that are sort of historic sites. Those are in Labrador. So those are old sites where mining companies had used lakes since the 1950s. But 14 of those are absolutely pristine lakes. And the really disturbing thing is that they're accelerating the pace at which this is happening, because 8 of these pristine lakes, they actually want to rush through consultations so that they can be put on Schedule 2 all within 1 year. And the first of these lakes, or the one of these lakes that we've just been consulted on, supposedly, was again back in Newfoundland, and it's a lake called Sandy Pond, but it is a big lake. It's a 38-hectare lake. And it's known for its exceptionally large size of its trout, and it also contains American eel, which is a species of concern. So, you know, that one is going to be the third one for Newfoundland, and then there's 7 others that they really want to chase through all within this year.
Now, what level of regulation would have applied to these lakes if the standard regulations and not Schedule 2 applied to them?
Well, before Schedule 2, these lakes would have been protected. This would not be able to happen. And they would have been protected in two ways. They would have been protected under the Fisheries Act, and that's Section 36 of the Fisheries Act, which talks about not putting any what they call deleterious substances into waters frequented by fish. And, of course, what we're talking about here is not just deleterious, it's completely wiping out the lake completely. The other way they would have been protected was through the metal mining effluent regulations themselves, which were a much later regulation. They were only created in 1977, but those regulations stipulate that you cannot put what they call total suspended solids above a certain limit into waters frequented by fish, and that limit is very low. And so it did prohibit putting mine waste, tailings, as they call it, into lakes. So the Fisheries Act and the Metal Mining Liquid Effluent Regulations effectively protected lakes and rivers and any natural water bodies with fish in them until 2002, when they added this special schedule.
Now, I understand that there was a very long public consultation that was meant to update and strengthen the regulations, and which finished, as you said, in 2002 when Schedule 2 was introduction. What did that process involve, and how did Schedule 2 fit into the regulations?
Yeah, that's such an important piece of the story, because the regulations that I just mentioned, the metal mining effluent regulations, which effectively protected lakes and natural water bodies, they date from 1977. And so in the mid-90s, there was an understanding from both from civil society groups, NGOs, and the government, and even industry, that these should be looked at again, because some of the limits that are put on metals and some of the limits that are put on other, you know, chemicals in these regulations hadn't been reviewed since 1977. So we started a multi-stakeholder review process, as I say, from the mid-1990s that lasted all the way to 2002, and it included NGOs, civil society groups, included government, and included industry. And in all those years, we looked at every aspect of these regulations. We argued over what the metal level should be. We argued over total suspended solids, over pH, all the different aspects of the regulations. And then in 2002, they were sent to something called Canada Gazette 1, which is the first process for a regulation to be amended to become law. And at that point, this schedule was added. So it was added after the consultation period was over, and it was never consulted on by the public. So there was no public consultation on this schedule. It got added at the last minute. We were told, once we noticed that it had been added, we were told that it was a legal issue, that the lawyers had argued that this needed to be added because otherwise some of the historic mines, like the two I just mentioned in Labrador, some of these historic sites, a lot of these even predate the metal mining effluent regulations, would be out of compliance when the new regulations came in. And in fact, there were some lakes on the schedule when they first put it in the regulations, and they were all old sites where lakes had already been used.
So the idea, essence, was to kind of grandfather in these historic lakes.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't use that word, and in fact, you know, to be fair to the man who headed this up at Environment Canada, we asked him if there was any chance that there could possibly be brand new healthy lakes put on these regulations in the future. And what he told us was there was a theoretical or a hypothetical chance, but that it wouldn't happen. Because, you know, he was saying, look, these regulations have never been reviewed since 1977. It took 25 years for them to be reviewed. We went through 6 or 7 years of public consultation. No mining company is going to sit around and wait for a whole regulatory amendment, for a regulation to actually be changed just so that they could use the lake. Mm-hmm. But here we are, you know, just a few years later, and in 2006, they amended the regulations again just to add those two lakes, and now they're wanting to amend the regulations, you know, time and time again. They're looking at amending the regulations within 4 or 5 times just within 1 year so that they can add 8 lakes. So literally, this regulation is being amended just to add lakes to Schedule 2.
What kind of public consultation are we seeing when lakes are being assessed for inclusion under Schedule 2?
Well, this is the other thing that's so painful about this. I mean, when the regulations were first amended in the mid-90s, it was a 6 or 7 year consultation period. Every part of the regulations were looked at. Now they've reduced this down. When the two lakes were added in central Newfoundland near Buchans, well, at least it was a year and a half. And, of course, we fought long and hard to try and protect those two lakes. But now the industry has argued that this is delaying their project. And this is, quite frankly, in some of their publications. They're saying, in fact, that because there's local-level consultation in the environmental assessment, there shouldn't have to be any more national consultation. We've pushed back on that and said, because you're amending a regulation, you have to have national consultation. But what Environment Canada and DFO have said is, okay, fine, we have to consult you, but you know what? You're going to get half a day, you get 4 hours, and that's it. We'll consider that finished consultation. So this is what they've been doing. They've just been bringing us in for 4 hours. That includes Aboriginal peoples as well as, you know, other kinds of NGOs. We get 4 hours, the company does a presentation, says this is why we're using the lake and this is what's going to happen, and we're out again. And that's it. That's what they're calling consultation now.
Once a lake gets approved for Schedule 2, as the two lakes in Newfoundland did, what kind of environmental process replaces the normally strict regulations that, that they should be under?
Well, the environmental process is a bit lengthy to describe, but there is an environmental assessment. Because they're going to be destroying a lake, they have to go through an environmental assessment under CEA, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act. But what they're doing is they're scoping these projects at the lowest level of environmental assessment, which means that formally, they're called screening level assessments, and formally, under a screening level assessment, they don't even have to consult with local people. Now, what they're arguing is, well, we understand that even though these are screening level and we don't have to consult local people, we're going to make sure the companies do some consultations because we understand that these are very contentious issues. Well, the problem is, because the companies don't have to consult with such a low level of screening for environmental assessment, they're doing some consultations, but they're not standardized, and they can do as much or as little as they think they want to do. So even that is quite unbelievable. Not only has the national level consultation been drastically reduced, but even the local level consultation is at the whim of the company, because the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, because the regulatory authorities like the Department of Fisheries and Oceans are screening these projects as only screening level assessments, which is the lowest level.
How common is it for mines to apply for Schedule 2 status for their tailing ponds? Are these situations the exception?
That's what the industry and the regulators would have us believe, and quite frankly, that's a little hard to sell these days because look at the situation. We've got 14 that they're telling us about are near term. In other words, a lot of these are already in environmental assessment as we speak. And of these, they're trying to chase 8 of these through just this year. They want to get all the consultations at the national level done for these projects just within this 1 year, just within 2008. So if you realistically look around at all the mines that are going to be going ahead or are at this advanced stage of environmental assessment in 2008, all the ones I know of are now looking at using lakes for their tailings impoundment. And why not, right? This drastically reduces the cost of containing your tailings. We've also been told informally by Environment Canada officials that they're getting something like 3 calls a week from mining companies, and this is the global mining industry, in questioning and informing on how they can use lakes for their projects in Canada.
Now, Catherine, this obviously appears as a weak link. I think you've called it a loophole, and I understand Environment Canada countered that by saying these are, in fact, the regulations. What do you think that stance says about the government's commitment to the intended spirit and principles behind environmental regulations meant to protect water sources and fish habitat?
Well, I think this is a huge breach of public trust on behalf of the government, and I think they've managed to get away with it because it is such a complex story, and it's happening in quite remote areas. But now that the story is starting to get out, the public is outraged. It's a breach of public trust. It basically breaches all of the commitments that the government has been making around sustainable development and being sustainable. All departments are supposed to have sustainability sort of programs that they've got in place. And I don't know how you can call destroying an ecosystem, an entire ecosystem forever, so that future generations will have no use of this ecosystem. I don't know how you can call that sustainable.
What are you hearing from Canadians on this issue?
Well, that's the really great part about the story, is now that through some good media work that's been done by the CBC recently, Canadians are starting to realize that this is happening, and I would say almost with unanimity, there's at least 90% of the response that seems to be coming back at the moment is just absolutely horror on the part of Canadians. They're appalled. They can't believe this is really happening. They can't believe it's happening in the 21st century. We've actually, made things worse in 2002 than they were back in the 1970s. So people are outraged.
What kind of response do you think it'll take to positively affect the regulation of lakes and to reverse this trend that seems to be developing?
Well, it's going to need to be a response on all levels. There's going to need to be a policy, you know, policy work done on this. What this amounts to is a huge subsidy to the mining industry. These lakes are being transferred from a public good to a private company with no accounting of the actual loss of value that that is to the public. So it's something that I think the Auditor General needs to start to take a look at. And we're certainly going to need to put pressure on through going to parliamentary committees and talking to MPs who, the ones we've talked to so far, are just as shocked as the rest of the public are. But there's also going to need to be pressure from the public. And it really, things don't change. And, you know, living in Ottawa, I've come to learn this. Things don't change unless people demand that they change. And that's what creates political will. And so really what needs to happen is not just a really large outpouring of concern from the public, but also a sustained outpouring. It can't be just a blip. It's going to have, people are going to have to stay on this for quite some time before it'll make a difference.
And what practical steps would you suggest that people take in the short term to start their response to this situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Mining Watch Canada, and I know some other organizations like the Suzuki Foundation, have put up action alerts on our websites, so that people can actually go to our websites, and we've got sort of a little bit of background information. We've got some addresses that they can write letters to, for, particularly for Ministers Baird and Hearn, and for how to find your MP so that you can write to your MP. Writing to the Prime Minister is always also a good idea, and we've got a sample letter there that people can use, although we always encourage people to write their own letters or to adapt a sample letter. So This information can be found on Mining Watch's website at www.miningwatch.ca. And I know that the David Suzuki Foundation also has an urgent action alert up.
Catherine, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've been speaking with Catherine Cummins of Mining Watch Canada, and you can find a link to the Mining Watch website from our site at cooperadio.org/redeye.